Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractor's Business Tape of the Month. This monthly cassette tape series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandy & Associates' vision of helping the service contractor come to a place of maturity and profitability. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. This month's tape is a continuation of last month's tape by Tom Grandy on learning effective management skills. Last month, Tom discussed 7 attributes of an effective manager, plus 4 ways to increase communications. This month's tape will be part 2 and will cover 3 specific goals effective managers need to meet, 3 great ways to motivate people, 6 ways to measure our success, and lastly, Tom will discuss 3 numbers that every manager needs to fully understand. Like last month's tape, I think you'll find this tape entertaining, as well as filled with lots of practical ideas on how to become a more effective manager.
Number one, we're going to set some specific goals right now. Create job description for yourself and for your employees. How do we do that? Physically, we start by asking the question, when you get in that new position, why is this job necessary, period? Why is it even here? I'm filling it, but why is it here? And the second question is, what am I expected to achieve in this position? Then over the next month, 2 months, I want you to write down every single task that you do, every single thing that you do on a daily basis. Write it down. After you've written it down for a month or so, you may have several hundred items on that list, things you've done over the last month or so. And the third thing is, I want you to prune that list, that 100 items or so you got, prune it down to everything unless it's directly contributed to the achievement of that job. As you cut it back and cut it back and cut it back, cut it back to 8 or 10 key activities that you should be doing every day. 8 or 10 key things that you need to be learning and doing and achieving as a manager in that position. And tell your boss that you're going through this process. And then at the end, when you've got that down to 8 or 10 activities, then sit down with your boss for a few minutes one afternoon and tell him, hey, this isn't set in stone, but this is the way I see my job. This is what I think I should be doing. Leave it with him for a while and then come back a little while later and discuss it, finalize it. The reason we do that is pretty simple. Now you've got your final job description. You and your boss now have a very clear picture of what's expected of you in that position, which may or may not have been clear when you started out. Once you're through with that process with yourself, then turn right around and do the same thing with every employee in your department. Ask them to make a list of their activities over a month or two, come back and share them with you, and then you'll have a clear understanding of what's expected, and they will as well. Number 2, create incentive systems. Single highest cost of doing business in your company, whether you understand it or not, is your cost of non-billable time. If you've been to any one of my programs, we all get around to that sooner or later because it's your single highest cost of doing business. It's more than equipment replacement, more than rent, more than insurance. It's your single highest cost of doing business. We've got to do everything we can do to reduce cost in general, and we always want to start with the area that's most expensive to us. I want to look at a couple things we can do here from an incentive system standpoint to minimize that particular area. One thing you can do is you can start paying on a percentage of a job. Then that way you'll have no non-billable time. Now the downside of that is you still got to keep the same paperwork you did before for the state, for the federal government, prove you paid at least minimum wage. But you can do it that way. The thing I like right here is make sure your costs are based, or our costs are based on a certain number of billable hours. Okay? Our costs that we set for the customer are based on us working a certain number of billable hours. Let's keep it simple. Let's say we got one service tech. We pay him for 2,080 hours a year, but by the time it all boils down, usually he's about 50% billable. Let's say he's got 1,000 hours he can bill during the year. All my costs are based on the fact that I'm going to bill out 1,000 hours. Okay? Now, what happens to me as a company when I actually bill out 1,001 hours this year? What happens to that next hour that I work? What's not there anymore? My overhead. My overhead's been covered with my first 1,000 hours. So that next hour doesn't have any overhead on it. Now, 3 really neat things happen when we go over our budget, okay? Our budgeted number of hours. 3 really neat things happen. First thing is, we got another hour that we're able to bill out. We got extra income coming in. Second really neat thing that happens is I've taken 1 hour of non-billable time, which was an expense over here. Now I've reduced my cost and made it profitable on the other end. And the third thing that happens is my existing overhead isn't now spread over 1,000 hours, it's spread over 1,001, so everything becomes more profitable. Point being this, every hour over budget that I'm able to sell becomes extremely profitable work. Now, if I'll figure out what that number is, I'll track it, I can set up some really neat incentive systems so that when my techs hit that roll, hit that budget point, and then go above it, man, share the profit. You can give them half of it, you'll still make a bunch of money. Third way to improve that process, pay one hourly rate for billed hours, another one for non-billed. I know a lot of contractors will do that. They'll pay $25 an hour for the billed hours and $15 an hour for the non-billed. Guess what happens the next day? Boom, billed hours went way up. Amazing. Amazing. Incentive systems make a big difference. Another specific goal, third one, have an organizational chart. Why would you want an organizational chart? Well, does anybody know why employees go down the street for 50 cents an hour? Anybody really know why that happens? Most of the time it's because they don't see a direction where they are. They don't see that they have a future in this company. And if since they don't have a future in this company, I might as well go down the street for another 50 cents an hour. I want to urge you, create an organizational chart as an owner or manager, whatever position you're in, for the next 3 to 5 years. Where you expect your company or your department to be 3 to 5 years from now, just spell it right out and show what the openings are going to be. You have a big service department, you may need a service manager. If you're growing in the office, you may need an office manager. If you're getting bigger, you may need a salesperson. You know, creating a chart that shows the positions that are going to be available, hopefully within 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Then sit down with those people that work for you and say, hey, these are going to be different. Do you have any interest in filling any of these? And if they do, in addition to the regular job, start training them to move into those positions. When you start doing that, guess what? They're not going to be on the street for 50 cents an hour because now they have a career path. They have a reason to stay and to go and to do. Okay? Provide the training for them so you're preparing them for future positions. Hire for attitude, train for service. Recruit all the time. That's a byword in today's market. You all know as well as I know, there's not enough techs out there to fill our positions right now, qualified ones. They're all working for somebody else. We've got to be looking outside the industry. When we look outside the industry, we're looking for people with a great attitude that are willing to be trained. And guess what? You know what? Most people with a great attitude are willing to be trained. Keep your eyes open all the time. You know, when you're out there and you've got technicians coming in to work on your telephone, work on your computer, do whatever they do at your office, pick out the ones with a good attitude. Get their name and their phone number. You go down to Walmart or Kmart or Office Depot and somebody waits on you with a great attitude, write down their name. Okay? Recruit all the time. It's absolutely essential as a manager. You're totally recruiting every place you go. Motivating your employees. You know the greatest way you motivate them, greatest way you train them? Teach by example. Much of what your employees will learn from you will be based on what they see, not what they hear. Be based on what they see and not what they hear. If customer service is number one with you, guess what? Over a period of time, it becomes number one with them. If you're neat and clean and orderly over a period of time, they'll become the same way. If your office and your truck is an absolute wreck, guess what? Pretty soon, theirs will be the same. Because they tend to model those who are over them. I have 3 daughters. My middle daughter is named Daria. She graduated a couple years ago from college in teaching. She taught for a year in Birmingham kindergarten, and she went down to Africa and did mission work, just got back for the past year. And that year she was down in Birmingham, she taught kindergarten. First year teaching. It was wintertime, or close to winter. It was heavy fall. And she just brought her class, these little bitty kids in, especially little girls. And another teacher happened to be there when she brought them in. She said, do you notice anything unusual about your students, Daria? She said, no, not really. She said, look at all the little girls. And she started looking at all the little girls. And you know what? Everybody that had a sweater had it tied around their waist. Everybody that had a coat had the arms tied around their waist. And the other teacher asked my daughter, Darius, she said, I've noticed over the last several months when you've been here, whenever you bring a sweater in, you always tie it around your waist, don't you? And she went, bingo, you're right. And those little girls had modeled what their teacher did. She never told them to do that. But they've been around her so long, they tend to become like her. Guess what? Our employees are the same way. If you want to change the behavior of an employee in your department, guess what? Start changing yourself, and pretty soon everything around you begins to change with it. Motivated implies three things: a need, a goal to satisfy the need, and behavior required to achieve that. We're talking about impromptu rewards right here. Okay? One of the strongest methods of motivating your employees is impromptu. That means just randomly. Okay? Provide visible and tangible appreciation for what they've done. Visible and tangible appreciation for what they've done. Begin to physically look for things your employees are doing right, not wrong, and reward them for it. It can be exceptional customer service. It might be staying out late to work on a job. It might be keeping their trucks extra clean. It might be helping fellow employees when they weren't asked to. Maybe they helped clean up the office or the shop when nobody told them to. In that vein, when you get ready to appreciate them physically, find out what your employees like. This is part of being a manager and a big part of it. Find out what your employees like to do. Okay? Do they like to go to ball games or rent movies? What do they like to do in their spare time? Do they like to go out to dinner with their wife or their girlfriend? Do they like to maybe have a special kind of candy bar? How about weekend retreats? Do they like to go away from the kids or maybe be with the kids and go somewhere on a weekend? Okay? Maybe they like to go hunting, they like to go fishing. Find out what your employees enjoy just by listening to what they do. And then when they do something exceptionally good, reward them in that area. My youngest daughter, who's in high school, works for me down at the office during the summertime. And sometimes another friend of hers works down there too. Her name is Natalie. And I know because the two of them are at our house a lot that Natalie really likes Three Musketeer bars. And she came down to our office a few weeks ago and was working before school started. I mean, when Natalie comes in, she sits in front of the computer. Excuse me. She sits in front of the computer and she types. She doesn't get up for break. She doesn't go to the bathroom. She doesn't go to lunch. How she does it, I don't know. She doesn't move. Okay? I just remembered one day. I said, I remember. Natalie likes Three Musketeer bars. So I went upstairs and I bought her a great big Three Musketeer bar. Tapped her on the shoulder and said, thanks for what you're doing, Natalie. Hand her that. I mean, I couldn't have given her $1,000 and made her any happier. Do something that your employee appreciates. Once you know what it is, surprise them with it, with exceptional performance. Don't just do it at the office. Take it to them on the job if they're out in the field. Put it in their paycheck as a surprise. Put it in their mailbox if they work in your office. Have the dispatcher call and say, hey, the boss said you did a great job. Got a certificate for dinner for you here. Okay. Impromptu. Be unique. Why? Because it says you care and that they'll remember it. Carrying that out a little bit further, as you say thank you, put it in writing. Gets back to something we shared earlier. Put it in writing. Put a note on their desk. Put a post-it note on their time card. If you really, really want to blow it away, I mean really in a positive way, just really reinforce your appreciation for your employee. You know what you need to do? Write a thank you note to their spouse. You may have the husband or the wife working for you. Send it to their spouse at their house. Say, hey, John's been working for me. Mary's been working for me for 2 months, 6 months. They're exceptional, and you list some of the qualities they saw in them, you've seen in them. Maybe send them a gift certificate to a local restaurant. Send it to their spouse. And you talk about appreciation. Makes a significant difference. Significant difference. This guy I know by the name of Greg Schaefer. He's the head of the PHCC group in South Dakota. Talking about communication again. Greg is a guy who's just about ready to retire, but year after year after year, Greg receives the award from the National PHCC Association for having the highest retention rate, in his chapter, and the largest percentage of new members. He's in South Dakota. There are not a lot of members out there. Okay? But every year he wins that award, and every year he goes to the national convention, and every year all the new execs come over to him and say, "How do you do that, Greg?" You know what all the new execs do? They send letters, they send emails, they might call the guys on the phone. You know what Greg does? You know what Greg's goal is every single year he's been an executive member, or executive director? His goal is to sit down physically in every contractor's office twice a year and just listen to him. What's helping you from the association standpoint? What can we do better? What's your problems? He sits down and takes time with them. Nobody takes time anymore. Do that with your employees. Measure success. Three things you need to do there. Inspect what you expect. If you're a person who has supervisory responsibilities out in the field, begin randomly checking productivity. Don't just send the guys out on a job for 2 days and hope they come back when it's finished. Stop in 2 or 3 times randomly. Maybe 10 o'clock today, maybe 3:29 tomorrow afternoon. See what they're doing. Guess what happens to productivity? Talk about non-billable time getting better. It'll improve it significantly. Number two, make a daily to-do list. If there's nothing else you do, I want you to think about doing this seriously. It sounds Mickey Mouse. It's not. Create a daily list of what you need to do that day. I suggest you do it before you go home at night. When I get back from the trip that I'm on right now, I'm going to be gone all week. Sometimes I will spend anywhere from 1 hour to 4 hours making a physical list of everybody I've got to call, of everything I didn't do while I was gone, things I need to do because I found out why I was gone, this had to be done, this had to be done. I've got a list of sometimes 30, 40, sometimes as many as 100 items. But when I'm through, I know everything I've got to do. Okay? That's the first step. Make a total list. Second step is, once you got that total list in front of you, we've all got a list of more than we can handle, right? Take that total list and then say, okay, today, this 8 hours that's in front of me, or 10 or 12, or whatever you were, today, what do I have to get done? Now, circle 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 items on that list. These are 100 I got to do eventually. These are the 8, 10, 12 items I got to get done today. After you've circled those, then put today's items in priority order. Of these 12 things, I'm going to do this one first, this one second, this one third, this one fourth. Put those 6, 8, 10, 12 items in priority order. Then begin your list in order. Once you've set that, don't jump down to number 5, go to number 7. Don't switch things around. Do them in order. And every time you check and finish one, check it off. I use a big red magic marker. I cover it. Man, I accomplish that thing. It may have taken me 3 minutes or may have taken me 4 hours, but I mark it off my list. You're also going to have situations during the day where you're absolutely forced to do what's not on your list. It's going to happen. But you know what I do? When I've got something like that I'm forced to do, I add that item to my list and I turn around and cross it off. Why? Because at the end of the day, it gives me a great feeling of accomplishment. I can look at my list and say, hey, I accomplished 23 things today. I can also tell you I've gone into my office probably more times than I've done this. Didn't take the time to make my list up properly, didn't go by it. At the end of the day, I've had a long, hard, frustrating, busy day. My wife will ask me when I get home, how'd your day go? I said, well, I was busy all day long, but I really don't know what I accomplished. But every time I got a list, I go home with a sense of accomplishment that night. If you don't do anything else, do that for yourself. Short interval scheduling works really good, too. All of nature abhors a vacuum. You've all heard that since you were this high. That means if there's empty time, it gets filled. If it's empty space, it gets filled. Simply stated, a person's activities, no matter what they are going to fill the entire day. It's a fact. So if you're working with people in the office, do a thing called short interval scheduling. All that means is give them a job to do, specific job to do, not 4 things, give them 1. And before you give them that job, estimate in your own mind how it's going to take to do that. And say, well, maybe it'd probably take 30 minutes or so. That'll be my best estimate. So I'll go out to the person in the office. Let's say it's Mary. Say, Mary, I need you to do this. I figure it'll probably take about 30 minutes or so. How long do you think it'll take? She may say 30, she may say 20, she may say 45. Whatever she says, write it down. So when she's written it down, she's committed to the fact that this is going to take her 30 minutes to do it. What's the next step? Go back to your office. And then 30 minutes later, if Mary hasn't come in yet, go see Mary. Say, hey, what's the status of that project? You have one thing to do, it's supposed to take you 30 minutes. Where are we? It's called accountability. You would be surprised how much more effective everybody in this room, including myself, is more accountable to somebody for what we're supposed to do. And after you've done that, give her another project, and another project, and another project, until the day is finished. For one project at a time, it's called short interval scheduling. It works beautifully. Same vein, if you have technicians you're supervising, never give your technicians all the calls first thing in the morning. Never give them all their calls first thing in the morning. What happened? Our law, all of nature abhors a vacuum. Guess what? If I've got two calls or six calls, it just filled 8 hours. It's going to happen, I promise you. Okay? If your tech's scheduled for the entire day, no matter how long the calls take, it's going to take the entire day. It's a fact. It becomes disruptive when you call that technician and say, hey, we're going to change his or her schedule. Well, you gave me the schedule this morning. Now what's going on? You cause friction when you do that. It's extremely difficult to put emergency calls in the middle of that process. Give them one call at a time. When you give them one call at a time, you're assigning the call to the first technician, have them call the office when they receive them, when they finish that one, and they're ready for the next assignment. Okay? What's that do? Number one, it allows flexibility in the schedule. Things change back at the office. It doesn't disrupt the technician because he didn't know where he's supposed to go next anyway. Number two, it allows the inevitable emergency call to get more easily scheduled than it would where you've sent out a fixed schedule for your guy during the day. It allows accurate timekeeping back at the office. Now you know when the job started, when the job finished. That's kind of nice to know. And one of the nice things about it is it gives the dispatcher time to call the customer ahead of time to be sure everything's lined up. So when you call a tech, you can say, hey, Miss Jones is ready. When they call in, she's ready for you over at her house or business or whatever it might be. It also provides a means for communicating with your technician. You've probably all been in that situation where they got an emergency call from home or something you need to tell the tech, and they don't call in. You can't get a hold of them for whatever reason. But you know in this particular situation, they're going to call in when they're through with that job. You've got an opportunity to convey personal or business information that needs to be forwarded to them. Again, it's accountability. Consider a 10-question. Again, this is on measuring success. Create a 10-question customer response form that you can send out to your customers. Mail out that 10-question response form to them. Include in that form a stamped, addressed envelope to return it to you. Usually attention president or owner so they know it's coming back to the president and the owner. And put a thank you note in. Thank you for your business. Now, how's that work? Excuse me. Also include, you may want to, $5 off or something like that to tell them you appreciate them. Okay? That's beside the point. Point is this. Make up 10 questions, probably with your technicians. Things like, did the technician show up on time? Were the technicians neat and clean after the job with satisfaction? Rate the technician on each one of those 10 things from 1 to 10. Ask the customer to do that. Or you can use a yes or no if you prefer. Okay? Surveys come back directly to you. Technician starts out with 10 points. You can start them out with 5 if you want to. I'm just using this as an example. Let's say it's 10 points. For every no answer, they subtract 2 points. Or if you're rating them on a 1 to 10 basis, every answer that came back that was less than 8, again, they lose 2 points. They start out with 10, got one no or one answer out of those 10 that was less than 8, they lose 2 points. Now they're down to 8. Okay? Every survey, good or bad, gets personally reviewed with the technician. That's the whole idea, personal accountability. The tech is then asked why they got a no on that question or why they got less than an 8. Sometimes it's valid. Sometimes it's a problem with the customer, not your technician. If they need time to talk to you, share with you, okay? If they can justify it, raise it back up. And then every month or every quarter, the technician is given a monetary bonus. For example, $1 for each point they've earned. Set up your system so that annually you're looking at giving your technician, if he does a good job during the year, somewhere between a $500 and $1,000 bonus at the end of the year. I know a couple of contractors who do this right now. And they said after 6 months of this, because they sat down, thank you, because they sat down with their techs after every single thing came back in, said it's done a world of difference in terms of customer relations. Okay? Now, we just talked about personal review. Measures of success. Number five, appraisals. It's hard to improve when you don't know you've done something wrong. Okay? So sit down with your employees and have an appraisal on a regular basis. What I suggest is you do two appraisals a year. You have one that involves their annual raise. Hopefully you do that each year. But another one where you just kind of sit down and check on things during the year. The second one should be very informal. Take them out to breakfast, take them out to lunch. You know, just a time to share, see where they are, see what's going on. And discuss what you like about their performance. Could be the quality of work, their attitude, etc. Discuss other areas that need improvement and why. Always give them positive feedback and some negative. Back to the ping pong balls again. And set goals to be met by the next review. Areas that you would like to see improve, that they think they should improve on. Measuring success, I'm not going to get into this, but it's something you need to give some serious consideration to. That's some kind of a satellite tracking system for your technicians. Now, there's Teletrack, Atroad.com, FleetMac is here, there's several other ones out there. You talk about accountability and reducing non-billable time, it's amazing. You will have fewer stops on the way to your job, you'll have reduced counter time, you'll drive slower, you'll have no moonlighting. Why? Because you can monitor every single truck, where it stopped, when it stopped, how long it was there, the speed between point A and point B. It's a phenomenal system, and it works well. And the bottom line is, it significantly reduces non-billable time, which is what? My highest cost of doing business. Let's look at a couple things in terms of understanding numbers. Being an effective manager is one thing. All the things we talked about is very helpful and needed and necessary and should be done. But the bottom line is, you've got to understand the business end of it. You're going to be based on profitability in your particular department. Understand your business. As time goes on, if you're not right now, eventually you're going to be expected to understand things like budgets, advertising, pricing, job estimating, marketing, customer service, hiring, accounting, scheduling, and a whole lot of other things. You may not be expected to do that now, but if you're going to continue on that chain within your company, eventually you're going to have to be expected to learn those things. Bottom line is, don't wait on that. Begin to train yourself now, so that you're ready for that next level we talked about earlier. You know, read trade magazines, listen to tapes, attend full-day seminars or conferences like you are right now. Join your local, state, and national trade associations and take part. Okay? Take part. We talk about growing. Attend a basic business boot camp for 3 days. Find ways to do things that can help you grow as an individual. Understand the basis of pricing for the area that you're responsible for. Okay? It's number two, understanding the pricing. The price of any product, any service that you're responsible for involves several different things. Involves labor, either direct or indirect. It involves materials, usually in some form. It has some overhead costs associated with it. And it has some profit involved in that whole thing. Understand the pricing that you're responsible for in your department. I'm going to do something that's kind of neat. We've got about 12 minutes left. I'm going to give you a full-day pricing, labor pricing seminar in about a minute and a half here. You ready for this? Everybody has their own little theme that they believe in. I teach on lots of different things, but the main theme of everything I do is understand your numbers. Know what you have to charge per hour to cover your cost of doing business and make a profit. This is how you calculate your hourly rate. First of all, calculate your total real cost of doing business, not just those overhead items you see like rent and utilities. Cost of non-billable time, cost of equipment replacement, cost of matching taxes. Get all your real cost of doing business in one place. Subtract from that the profit that you make on the sale of your materials, your spare parts, depending on what particular departments you might be working in. That's going to reduce your overall cost of doing business. Divide the remaining overhead costs by your billable hours, not your total hours, but by your billable hours. Okay? That's going to give you your overhead rate per hour. Now, to get your break-even rate, you take the overhead rate per hour we just calculated, and we add the average hourly rate in the field, and that gives me my break-even rate. Okay? No profit, but I've covered my cost. Well, I want to build profit in, so what I do is I take my break-even rate right here. If I want a 10% profit, I'm going to take 100 minus 0.1, which would be 0.9. And I'm going to take my break-even rate divided by 0.9, and that's going to build a 10% profit into my rate. Okay? Congratulations, you just went through a full-day seminar in about a minute and a half. But that's the principle. Lots of details in the middle of it, but that's the principle. Third thing is, create systems. Create systems. Like McDonald's. You got a hamburger, you do it a certain way, a certain direction, with a system, and you wind up with a winning product. Proper systems are setups. Why? So that anyone can produce that product. We want to set up our department so it's so systematized that the next person that comes in, all they got to do is follow the procedures that you've written out. That's our goal. They used to tell us as industrial engineers, our whole focus was to reduce costs and do things more effectively. They said the ultimate sacrifice for an industrial engineer is to offer yourself as a time savings or cost savings. Okay? It's the same way. Our job should be to work ourselves out of a job so it can run without us. Think of what you're responsible for and set up a system for it. Everybody in here is responsible for different things. Might be call taking, might be scheduling, might be inventory control, might be tool checkouts, invoicing, payroll. Everybody in here, if you're a manager, you're responsible for something. Make it a goal to set up a system for everything you do. That's time consuming. But write it out, document it, and when you're through with that, go on to another thing and another thing and another thing. And pretty soon, your whole department is systematized. If you're the owner, that's your goal for your company. Because guess what? You can't sell your company until it runs as a system without you being there. That's your goal as a company. One last thing, and then I'm going to wrap it up. We should be right on time here. When you go through this seminar, you're going to go through four or five more before you leave. You've already been through one, maybe two so far. Your head's going to be swimming. You're going to be sitting here saying, man, I can't wait till Saturday. I got to get back tomorrow because I got 12 things I got to do right now. Back when I was a little boy, my favorite program on TV was called The Wide World of Sports. My favorite program of that particular series every year was the surfing championships from Hawaii. In those surfing championships, I would watch these great big 40-foot waves. You've seen them on TV curling over like that. There's this little bitty surfer down at the bottom. Man, I'd sit there glued to my chair thinking, man, I hope he doesn't slip. Because if he does, that wave's going to come over and he may never surface again. Well, guess what? That's you and me. This is the world of business and all the things we got to do coming in on top of us. And man, if we don't do this, this, that right now, we're in deep trouble. Well, in the midst of that, I want to tell you a couple things, share a couple things with you. Number one, keep your priorities in order. There's a little poem, you've probably heard it before, and I've modified it just a little bit for today. It goes like this. It said, 100 years from today, it won't matter how much money you made. It won't matter what kind of house you lived in. And it won't matter what kind of car you drove. 100 years from today, the only thing that's going to really matter, is how much love you sowed into your spouse, your children, your neighbors, your customers. Now that's what changes lives. There's a little story I read many years ago impacted my life. It was called The Tyranny of the Urgent. The Tyranny of the Urgent. And in that thing, they talked about the difference in the urgent and the important things of life. And what that article said was this. It said the urgent things of life will absolutely scream for your time. I mean absolutely scream your time. If you don't do that right now, it won't get done. Got to do it today. Right? Where the really, really important things of life, you know what happens to them? They just sit there on the shelf and they wait for you to make time for them. Really important things just sit there and wait for you. While the urgent things sap out your strength, your time, your energies. When every one of you goes back to the shop on Monday morning, guess what's going to hit you the first thing when you walk through the door? Urgent! Man, I got two techs to quit. My truck broke down. Materials didn't come in. There's 6 quotes that didn't get out. What am I going to do? I got to do that. It's urgent. I got to do that right now. But You're going to go through 4, 5, 6 seminars, and you're going to prioritize things, and you're going to say when you leave here, man, this is important, and that's important, and I need to do this. But unless you make time for it, guess what? It won't happen. It's the same way in your personal life. Most of us are males in here like I am. We go home after a busy day, we hit the front door. What's urgent for us? Often. Man, I want to mow the grass. I want to watch the ball game. I'll go out with my buddies tonight. Okay? You know what's really, really important at the end of a busy day? Sit down and talk to your spouse for a while. Unwind. Go to Billy's ball game. Go to Susie's recital, even though you hate piano. I tell you, those years will pass, and they're going to pass quickly. I've been doing business training in this industry for 15 years, and I cannot tell you over that 15 years how many contractors I've run into who have spent their entire life, building a successful company. I mean, they've done it. I mean, they've been written up in the trade journals, and they've gotten the awards, and they've done all those things they're supposed to do. But you know what? In most cases, not all cases, but in most cases, it's cost them something. Sometimes it's cost them their health. Sometimes it's cost them their spouse. Sometimes it's cost them the time with their kids when they were growing up. Now, I'm not saying be sloppy in your job. Now, you're called to be an excellence in every area of your life, business and personal. What I am saying is keep up priorities in the middle of that. Most of us went into business for one reason and one reason only. That was to provide for a family. But if we're not real careful, what happens during that process is my job becomes my life. I've yet to heard one person who was on their deathbed look up and say, gee, I wish I'd spent more time at the office. It's not going to happen. Okay? Keep your priorities in order.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's tape. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. Better yet, check out Granding Associates on the World Wide Web. Our totally redesigned website now has a complete listing of all of the products and services Granding Associates has to offer. Our address is www.grandingassociates.com, and it is also printed on the tape insert. Again, our website address is www.grandingassociates.com. One last comment. Granding Associates' newest program called the Basic Business Bootcamp is taking the industry by storm. Contractors from across the country are traveling to Owensboro, Kentucky to attend Tom Grandy's bootcamp. If you're not generating the profit you deserve, I would suggest you seriously consider attending the 3-day bootcamp to learn all the basics of how to run a profitable business. To sign up for one of the monthly programs, simply give us a call at 1-800-432-7963. The Service Contractors Business Tape of the Month is produced and distributed by Granding Associates. If we can be of service to you, give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.